Good morning. You are listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm here with my co-host Celeste Carey, and a happy Monday morning to you.
Well, a sunshiny one at least.
If you are living in Portland, Oregon, and the sun will last for, who knows?
Well, as long as it does.
As long as it does.
That's all we can say.
Hey, this morning we are continue our exploring about where we are as a nation and as a world. And joining us this morning is John Cronin, who has been a restaurant worker for 11 years and an organizer. He will be in Portland this week. He and Casey Asprof Jackson will speak in several locations this week about where we are as a nation, as a world, and about rebuilding a revolutionary left. So joining us right now is John. Good morning, John. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Thanks, Cecil and Celeste. It's great to be here. I'm excited to come out of the Northwest. I've never been to the West Coast before, so it's going to be good.
Okay.
To the left coast. Yep, I guess so. One way or another, huh?
So it's really be great for you to come out here to the left coast to do some comparison and comparing notes with organizers here and those on the East Coast. So perhaps we can begin. I noticed I saw a couple of flyers about your speaking engagement here and noticed that topics like rebuilding a revolutionary left. Perhaps I should begin by, has there been a revolutionary left in the past and where did it go?
Actually, the United States, of course, the world has always had one, but, you know, we live in the United States, so just focus on that at the moment. We've had a revolutionary left, you could say, to the times of trying to end slavery, the early 1900s, the people, the anti-imperialists are trying to end World War One. At the same time, there was a massive socialist party. There was radical unions, the IWW, which had a stronghold up in the Northwest. During the 30s, we had the Communist Party, even though with all its flaws. 50s and 60s, the Civil Rights Movement, you could argue, was the beginning of some type of a revolutionary movement. But we could see around the 60s and 70s tailing off. The left in the United States kind of failed from two things. It got crushed by the state and other forces. It also kind of faced an internal crisis of its identity, of trying to deal with things like the women's movement and other movements that historically the left used to focus only on class. But these movements challenged that and brought gender and sexuality to the table. And not everyone was able to deal with all these things. So now we're in a time where at least our organization is trying to help build with other organizations a movement that takes class, gender, race, authority all into account and try to challenge power and try to form some social change that's long-term and lasts.
Yes, certainly, as you touch upon, there has been in the left and in our history, there has been destruction from outside forces, government, corporations, but also, as you mentioned, internal conflicts. And you mentioned just briefly your organization. Are you referring to the Organization for a Free Society?
Yes, that's the name, yeah.
Okay, and tell us a little bit more about that and how you're organizing.
Okay, we basically started, and we came. Our big coming out party was the U.S. Social Forum this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really been in the works probably for the last 3 years. We've existed in some form probably the last 2 years. What we are is we're a organization of organizers and activists who have committed to the social liberation and the change as a collective and as a society. But one of the things that really you can hold us apart from some other groups, I would say, is not only our focus on analysis, but our focus on vision. What mm-hmm. would a new society look like? We really feel that you could go to a library and look at all the books written by leftist authors and the ones on why capitalism is bad, why patriarchy is bad, can go to the moon. but books on what a viable alternative for people to be able to actually strive towards is going to be probably as high as me, probably less. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of based on the idea that that you're going to get on an airplane if you don't know where it's going to land. You don't need a blueprint, but you need some type of idea of where you're going. So we focus on that. We also don't elevate one area of oppression above others. Some people say class is the main thing. Some people say gender is the main thing. We hold class, race, gender, sexuality, authority, all of the central to analysis. And we also have an orientation of building, of challenging power, you know, taking on corporations, taking on the corrupt unions, taking on the state, but also building alternative institutions where we can learn to be democratic, where we can create the, you know, these seeds of the future in the shell of the old. And we started in New York City and Detroit, and we're slowly trying to expand.
I want to address one of the points that you brought up, John, about holding all of these separate aspects of humanity constant. That seems to be a daunting task, because that's one of the reasons why I think the left has kind of sunk from the center in, imploded. How do you hold gender? How do you hold race constant in the light of some deep-held differences of opinion and perceptions, both culturally and externally, you know, that have torn apart the labor movement many times?
Yeah. Well, first, we're not holding them up because we think it's right to, because we think it's like the moral high ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that is part of it. But we think it's the reality of our system at the moment. There could have been a time in history where, you know, class really did make the biggest difference, or that gender did.
Right.
But now, like, the old argument used to be, like, for class, even though we strongly believe, one quick point, we kind of find ourselves kind of funny. Over the last 30 years, there's a struggle for the women's movement and stuff to get gender on the table, or, you know, the queer liberation movement to get sexuality on the table. But now we've kind of found in recent days that the class is kind of off the table. So we kind of find a two-way struggle within people who focus on class too much, trying to bring other things in, people who focus on other issues, trying to bring class in. So it's kind of funny. But is that it's always at play. So you could say that people used to say, oh, well, we need food on our table, so that's why we got to focus on the economy, because that's how we survive, and then that's how we do politics, that's how we do family. But don't we need new people on Earth, like child rearing, socialization? Don't we need to celebrate another community? Don't we have some identity to worship, or your religion? All these things are always at play. So, and it's tricky. It's case by case. You can't always say going through like a labor struggle for higher wages, and then all of a sudden go, well, it's not only about the wages. It's these wages are we're not talking about race, so the struggle is not revolutionary. Well, maybe at that time people are talking about wages, but the role of the revolutionary at that point is, because there's always going to be the other factors at play. So you could say, okay, wages, but what if? Okay, let's take an example. I organize restaurants. What if instead of saying we want the people in the back of the house, who mostly tend to be people of color, we want them to have higher wages, why don't we question the racialized labor breakdown? Why is it only people of color in the back of the house? Why is it only women who do the kind of service and greet work, like the hostesses, the reservationists? Those are real concrete things that we could do, like in a labor struggle, but yet even some of the best unions kind of fail to do sometimes. Because they're kind of, either say there's some people who might be aware of that, but they're blinded to it, or there's people who do believe it because there are a lot of great radical labor organizers, but they don't think it's feasible to bring it up. So of course it's not easy. There's people have different ideas on gender, on the ideas on class, on authority, but we can never come to any agreement if we don't start to raise those questions in the first place. And through struggle, we can maybe find some common ground.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil. I'm here with my co-host Celeste. We're speaking this morning with John Cronin, who is an organizer, has been a restaurant worker, organizer for over 11 years. He will be in Portland this week, speaking at various locations, Laughing Horse Bookstore, I think Portland State University, and at The Variant. And he is working with the Organization for Free Society. And our conversation this morning is about rebuilding a revolutionary left. Is there one? And what are the challenges we face?
And what strategies do we have in mind?
Yeah. Yes.
So I appreciate what you said in earlier, talking about how we're often good with analysis and we fail with the vision thing. And I think that that's a very important point you make. How do we create a vision that is captivating and compelling, and how do we share that with others?
Well, the first part of the question, trying to create the vision, is we have a wealth of analysis by so many incredibly intelligent people. Like, if we think some of the smartest people on Earth have been leftists, like all the greatest scientists, all the greatest writers. So we have those brilliant people. We don't even need those. Look at all the organizers that we've had in the past who've never even made the history books. So we have a pretty good basis to start deciding, take the economy, because that's kind of what I'm, like, as far as an alternative, that's what I'm most versed in. We know that we don't want we don't want a market economy. Well, I would say not. There's a large majority going. We know we don't want private ownership, because that takes away people's ability to self-management. We know that the corporate hierarchy of labor, of people who do rote work and people who do the empowering work, doesn't force the people's capabilities of self-worth and being able to have say over the job. So we look at these things, and then we have to try to say, okay, then what would, like, if we want a classless economy, what would lead to a classless economy? We've seen that central planning doesn't work because it's authoritarian. We've seen that simply having one worker, one vote in the a cooperative. But if the division of labor is still people sweeping floors and people doing finance, but you still have one worker, one vote, most likely the people doing the empowering work will dominate those areas of life. So we have to identify the problems and then kind of use something sometimes the left doesn't use, a little bit of common sense analysis, and try to find ways that could be that we can find the solutions to those. And as far as spreading it, we have to first have a vision to spread it. That's been the big hurdle. And secondly, I think that's part of the thing why we formed Organization for a Free Society, is you need collective means to spread it. You need organizations to be able to struggle within social movements and bring up these ideas when they're in the mass struggles. We need media outlets like yours and like other ones. We need to launch massive education campaigns and do it in a way that's not overly intellectual, that's not yelling at people for not believing it in the first place. You have to do it in a way that gets in touch with people's human side, that's accessible, and really has an arrogance of being that we know we're right, so we're going to be confident, but not saying an arrogance of saying, we know we're right and you're stupid, why don't you join us?
Mm-hmm. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Please join in the conversation, 503-231-8187. One of the things I heard you say was creating a vision, sharing a vision, failing to basically spread a vision. What are some of the themes that are arising as the left seeks to create a compelling vision to share? What do you see as some of the themes that are arising?
Well, one of the things that I think is very promising is that, as we were talking before about trying to elevate various social spheres to the central, that isn't as hard of a struggle as it used to be in times where I wasn't old enough to, you know, to hold the job. Mm-hmm. So I think that's because so people recognize the need to find a vision in different spheres of life across more of a broader spectrum, not just particularly those groups that are pushing it. Mm-hmm. But I think people are seeing from some world examples that people are trying things that are not necessarily the old ways. For example, take Hugo Chavez and the revolution in Venezuela that's going on right now. For all its pros and its cons, they're trying to create what they call 21st century socialism that isn't Soviet socialism and that, you know, isn't capitalism. You know, there's a long way to go, but the idea that there's millions of people who want to struggle for something that hasn't existed before, you know, that's something that's on the table. We see, like, one of the things a lot of the problem is today's youth around issues of sexuality and gender are questioning gender norms, gender binaries, ways to have relationships, and they're not even necessarily consciously radical. It's something that they think just makes sense. There's along the environmental lines, we realize that we have an environmental crisis that has to be staved off, and that maybe that we're looking for solutions within capitalism may not work. So we have to go something beyond that. I know there's so many things that we need to change, but I think some of those examples that I brought up are gaining more ground, and the people also, there's a lot of discussions going on, like how do we bring these revolutionary ideas, you could say, into reform struggles without being, in the right way where people don't think we're trying to co-opt these messages.
Yes. We are speaking with John Cronin, and we invite you to call and participate in the conversation. John, we have a caller online. We'll go to that caller. Good morning.
Okay.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, one thing I would have to say is, like, you know, I definitely think the left, progressive, what have you, definitely needs to regroup and kind of restructure. But I think your panel or your guest there is a keen example of what's exactly wrong. He's all over the board, and I understand it's probably just a show to bring up many topics, but there's never honing down on one thing. And then he says, oh, but I'm a financial guy, and gives the, you know, barely even a cup of coffee discussion about, oh, I'm a financial guy. Not at all. I mean, obviously he has good points to say, but he's so far over the map, he offers no solutions and just some blanket statements. That's what's wrong. No real leadership. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Your response to that, John?
Well, first, I'm trying to leave some time for people like him to call in, so I'm not going to give a 25-minute talk on alternative economics, but if he wanted to come out to the talk, maybe at Portland State University, I could do that for him. I don't know if that's all over the map, because, well, and what it actually brings up a good point. In a way, it is all over the map, because society is complex. And that just shows that we're not going to, that a revolutionary movement is a movement of millions. It can't be a few thousand. It can't be 1 million. So in order to address all these spheres of life, we're going to need a movement of millions. I think his point just illustrates how hard and long-haul the struggle is. But as far as leadership, you know, at the moment, our organization doesn't claim to be the leaders. we believe we have something to offer. We're still relatively small at the moment. But
let me bring this point, and then we'll go to our next caller here. And think of it in these terms. You may be new. You may not have, as you said, taken a leadership role. But I'm sure that you've got a couple of compelling points and a vision to share. So after the next caller, let's explore that.
Okay.
All right. We'll go to our next caller. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, not getting the high sign here from the engineer. Let's see. Let's try it again now.
Good morning, caller.
Is that me?
Yes, sorry.
That's you.
Oh, hi.
Sorry for the delay there.
Oh, that's fine. I love you guys. I was wondering if your guest that you have with you today has read The Small Mart Revolution by Schumann. I have been trying to write this book for like 3 years now, and I found that book, Small Mart Revolution, and he already wrote my book. But I was wondering if, I'm sure he probably has read like the localization and the different multipliers when we put our money into locally owned businesses and how it multiplies through our economies, local economies.
You know, that's a very good point. That's some of the same points former guests of ours,
really,
Dave Corton, brought up. But who is the author of your book, Small Mart Revolution?
I know his last name is Schumann. They've
Schumann.
Got one down at Powell's.
Okay.
But I'm sure that they have one at Laughing Horse, too. I'm going to try and catch him when he's in town at Laughing Horse.
Okay.
I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for your call.
Bye.
Hi, John. Are you familiar with the book?
I'm not familiar particularly with that book, but I am kind of familiar with the school of thought behind. Because I have heard of the book. I've heard of the author. So I can't speak with, directly to the book, but when she describes the local economy things, I am familiar with that, so I can probably speak on that for a moment. One, I think, there is greater benefit in the investing locally and trying to build community development. The things I have seen problematic with some of the authors in some of those schools of thought is, one, they think, I'm not sure about the Schumann author, but that small is good and the large is bad,
mm-hmm.
that the solution is kind of small, self-sustaining, societies and communities all networked together. And I think that is not necessarily the way to go, because it's small isn't necessarily bad. Like, you could have a family-owned sweatshop.
Right.
So I know they're not arguing along those lines. And then the other point is, I'm not sure if Schumann wants to do that in, like, a market economy, or wants to have some type of differently socially planned economy. Because I would argue any attempt to do stuff within a market that might be like a credit union or self-cooperative, all things that we would fight to do, unless you eventually supplant the market forces on a global scale or on a U.S. scale, there's always going to be a tendency to have to compete in the market.
Excuse
and
me.
Like one quick example, like right now people saying throw your money to a credit union instead of the big banks. Well, a lot of the credit unions are, a lot of their financial systems are actually influenced by the big banks, because through bonds and other things. So
yes,
it's good for in a lot of ways for the community and stuff. But I'm not familiar. But if that's the only solution, then it would not be adequate enough in the long run. But it's always good to try things out.
It's one way in which we begin to address some of these issues. John Cronin will be in Portland this week, speaking at, I think, at least three locations. You'll be at Portland State University on Wednesday, November 5th. At room 236 from 3 to 5 p.m. You'll be at the Variant that same day from 7 to 9 p.m. That's located at 4810 Northeast Garfield. And also, I think you're speaking at Laughing Horse Bookstore. I don't have the time and date of that in front of me, but I would urge our listeners to call here or call Laughing Horse Bookstore for that. John, we have another caller online. Let's go to that caller.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, caller.
Good morning. I really like what John's talking about here. The thing is that when you start talking about gender and sexuality, you really, really scare the daylights out of people. But if you don't do this, then you're never really going to get anything. So I applaud that. One of the things I wanted to know was where he's speaking, and so you got that, but I didn't find out where.
Okay.
Time on Garfield. And the other thing is, I'd like to hear him expound a little bit
Okay, caller.
About his organization and their platform.
Okay, caller. It's very difficult to hear you. I'm going to repeat those questions and have John respond to you. John will speak at Portland State on Wednesday, November 5th at Smith, room 236 from 3 to 5 p.m. He will speak at The Variant, which is located at 4810 Northeast Garfield on Wednesday, November 10th from 7 to 9 p.m. He and Casey Asproth Jackson will be the speakers, and we'll check about Laughing Horse Bookstore. I think the caller wanted to know something more about your organization for Free Society, John.
I mentioned some things before, but, you know, we're a group committed to complete social transformation. He mentioned something about some more of a platform.
Mm-hmm.
I guess long-term, we strive for a collectively self-managedly run economy. The same with as far as the political sphere, we want a truly democratic the polity, which would be run on a system of assemblies or councils that are rooted in neighborhoods. When it comes to gender and sexuality, we want people to be able to express the gender freely, the truth of identity they like, and have institutions that actually will support them, which means people being able to do different types of relationships, you know, polyamory, monogamy, marriage, traditional marriage, whatever, any type of other marriage they like. For a team in the sphere, we have something we call intercommunalism, which basically means that society gives resources and institutions to different communities to give them the ability to sustain themselves and to reproduce, so people can wear different hats. You know, I could be an Irish American,
yes,
queer person, and be able to leave those spheres. Like if I'm brought up Catholic, it's maybe my parents wouldn't do that. I would be able to leave freely into another religion without anyone telling me that I couldn't, and any social consequences. The environment, we believe that to save the environmental crisis, we need it goes back to the economy mainly, but also people's need and the desire to change the environment. So we need a policy that looks towards the environment that is like environmental stewardship and an ecological balance, where we're not treating the environment as a commodity, but as something that is one with us, and we have to be able to treat it fairly.
I was just going to ask if we could take one or two of those points that you mentioned and just kind of hear a little bit about your group's strategy for achieving some of these.
Okay. I get about 3 minutes.
Right.
Okay. The owner of my job is actually here. So
okay.
Strategy. So like I said before, we kind of focus on building counter institutions, which confront power directly, and then alternative institutions, which can help build the seeds of the future and the shell of the old to help. We can't live in a democratic society if we don't know how to act in a democratic way. So it's kind of an experimental ground.
Mm-hmm.
So we could say, again, I'll go to the economy because that's kind of what I know best, even though the caller doesn't think I do, is that we might say the government obviously failed at doing any of this, but we could, as a movement, as a majoritarian movement of, you know, broader, not just OFS, but a larger group, we could push in order to get working people are the most affected by this economic crisis. So we need a massive fiscal stimulus package,
right,
which it puts a lot of money into the economy. And then we would say, okay, well, that's fine. Anyone could say that. Now, here's where we put a little tinge on it, like kind of what we say, a non-reformist reform. We would say, well, we want that money to be controlled locally by planning boards that are elected by people in the community, and in conjunction with city government or whatever it comes up with, that the control of those funds is local and is controlled by the people who are affected by them. And
okay.
So in a way, we're trying to bring some of the control back into the social sphere and out of the private hands, instead of saying we're going to give tax breaks to rich people. And then within those spheres, we push more and more to raise consciousness that, okay, we have to go beyond this, at the same time as building a social movement for the sake of the social movement, and not just because we want to build it for our own gain. Like, it's good to build a workers' movement, because even within narrow trade unionism, it makes workers' better lives better. But we have to struggle within that to help change the orientation of these movements so it moves to practice self-management, that it tends to go beyond, that its vision is not just in the reforms, but it's going beyond capitalism. And that, so I think that's kind of a short, I don't know if you want to ask one more specific question, I'd be happy to answer.
Okay, we have one caller on the line. Let's see if we can get the caller on line before you lose your job. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good morning, caller. Thank you.
Well, good morning. Hey, I've got a quick question real quick. So y'all are talking about the left. And how does the left, is the left in your vision the same thing as the justice movement? Are they different entities?
Okay,
thank you.
Well, when I speak of the broader left, I'm thinking of like the social justice movement and people who, because there's people who do left work who might not necessarily identify as like a leftist, like people who fight for housing rights, whether they have ever heard of Karl Marx before or of our, your own Portland or Robin Hanel, are on the left. But we do make a kind of a distinction between the social movement left and the organized political left. Not that they're above each other or one is better than the other, but there's like a different orientation. Like, there will always be a social movement left, people fighting for justice, people fighting for struggle. The organized political left is people who are self-conscious about those struggles and usually organize into organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a relationship between those two. So mm-hmm. OFS, it works to build the social movements and the left in general, but does it as part of what you might call like the organized political left.
Hey, thank you so much, John, and I appreciate you taking the time this morning to chat with us. I'll let our listeners know when and where you'll be speaking. This was a really quick, brief journey, but I'm sure that as we come out and hear and engage with you this week, we can explore some of these issues deeper.
Yeah, it was great being on, and thank you very much.
Okay, safe travel, and welcome to the Left Coast.
Yes, and.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to bring a little of our fast-talking, hard-hitting New England Northeasterness out there. So
all right.
Okay. And, keep that Rhode Island accent.
Yes.
Yes.
And you'll be able to hear John Cronin Jr. Thursday, November 11th. The program begins at 6 p.m. at Laughing Horse Books at 12 Northeast 10th here in Portland. For all of you who like to map out your quest, so to speak, 97215 is the zip, 503-236-2893 for more information. It's free and open to the public. Donations appreciated. This discussion will be presented by OLA, Hands Off Latin America Series, and discussion series is The Left in Crisis, Strategic Ideas for Class Warfare. John Cronin Jr., accompanied by Casey Asbruth Jackson, who is a student at Bard College. And you'll get a chance to discuss with them how we can strategize for organizing the left.
And also, if you're unable to make it on Thursday, on Wednesday, the two will speak at Portland State University from 3 to 5 p.m. Smith, room 236, and at the Variant at from 7 to 9 p.m., and the Variant is located at 4810 Northeast Garfield, and that's on Wednesday, November 10th. And if you just want a hear more of John, stay tuned after our program for the OMO Variety Hour. Bill Resnick will engage him in an interview that he taped earlier, a short interview with John. Let me remind you that coming up this morning at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour, where Bill Resnick looked at what progressive can and should do after the aftermath of last week's midterm election, and also a discussion of mental health issues and the military. At 10, it's Air Cascadia. At 10:15, Locus Focus, a leading Canadian scientist, discuss a new report that contradicts the government and industry claims that Canadian tar sand mining operations are being managed in an environmentally responsible manner and not harming the environment. At 11 on Health Watch, Mark Castell of the Cornucopia Institute talks about their report, Scrambled Eggs, Separating Factory Farm Egg Production from Authentic Organic Agriculture. And at 11:30, Making Contact looks at the price of nature. Is there a way to approach the climate crisis other than through the language of economics? We'll hear a roundtable discussion about alternative ways to both understand and solve the climate crisis. All of this here this morning on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. And you're listening.
You're listening here to More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste. Opportunity to kind of, as we finish, we only had our guest for a short time, to finish our conversation here about, from your perspective, some viable strategies. Our guest, John Cronin Jr., touched on a lot of topics. Was there one or two of them that resonated with you? And I've been trying to pull up Small Mart here because I wanted to address a couple of points that our caller made about the recycling of dollars in a local venue. And that's a very, very common old strategy for strengthening communities economically. We hear about it all the time in terms of just buy what's buy in local. Season, oh, buy uh-huh. local. Uh-huh. Our local grocers, for example, taking advantage of the bounty here in the Northwest and featuring more of the produce that's grown here and taking advantage of our climate's foods. If that's something that resonates with you, give us a call. Talk about how you see that as a viable strategy. And
what's our phone numbers?
503-231-8187.
And also, looking at possible strategies, that's one in terms of local, focusing on the local economy. But I'm sure many of you, if you have not hung over from last week's elections, might have some reflections, reflection on where do we, the left, go from here. Much has been focus in recent months and weeks around organizing around electoral campaigns. And I think all of us are familiar with the limitations of such a strategy. One thing that our guest John Cronin suggested, and we'll speak about this coming week, is not only a wider vision, but a way in which we can organize a movement rather than organizing around particular local electoral campaigns or federal electoral campaigns. What are the strengths and weaknesses of the left? Is there a left? And what do you see are ways in which we can, as John suggests, not only be very good with analysis, but share the vision? It seems to me that one thing that I take from the electoral campaigns of this last few months is the ability of those on the right to share, whether or not you agree or not, a vision and a way in which to capture the popular imagination. If we are seeking to create, as John Cronin suggested, a popular social movement, how do we do that? Give us a call here and share your vision with us.
Well, you know, I want to go back to something I asked him at the very beginning, and I didn't feel that I got the best answer out of it, and that was the idea that there are too many strands, divergent and diverse strands within this tapestry of what we call the left of the progressive movement. And I heard him say something that I thought was creative, but I didn't hear the meat on the bone, so to speak, and that was holding some of these elements constant so that none of them is greater or less than, but they're considered, but they're not going to be the driving force. So not gender, not class, not race, for example, just to name three. None of those are going to be any bigger or any less than, and we hold them constant. And I found that to be fascinating. I'm wondering if people have some thoughts on whether that is a viable strategy and just how it could be accomplished. Is that something that could move the progressive or slash left forward by just giving each component its due equal footing, equal weight?
Yeah, I think that's a challenge, and I think people such as our guests probably have given some thought of that. The challenge is in terms of looking at our analysis. So while I agree in principle when we're talking about oppression, that we need to keep in mind the many ways that we are oppressed and look at class and gender and race and sexuality. When you're creating movements, it's good to be aware of those. But people enter into the movement from a particular angle.
Through that portal.
Through that portal very well. So it's good to enter through that portal, but how do we expand, or do we need to expand our analysis? And is it true that one does not trump the other? Is class analysis the best way to look at our society? Some people have argued that race or gender, and maybe it's a position of privilege. I'm speaking off the top of my mind to say that we need to hold all of these equally when one is in the midst of feeling a particular oppression more heavily than others.
Well, I'm not going to argue that there is not an aggregate effect. I believe there is. But at the same time, when you think about how we take, for example, in statistical analysis, you do hold some factors constant, not just to weigh one, but to come up with a strategy for addressing things, to address whatever the aggregate effect is. The other thing that I'm wondering is, yes, we know that there are all these different isms, but the basic premise, the basic thrust, if you will, is that just keep people down by any means necessary, keep them divided so that you can move whatever your idea is. So if you walk into one culture and it's a fairly homogenous culture, you use one tool to address them. Maybe you use gender to keep them down because it's a homogenous culture. But if you walk into a culture where you might have a couple of other diverse factors or elements with them, then you come up with different things. So maybe you use color instead of race, or you use color and gender, or you use color and gender and educational levels. But it all amounts to the same thing. It's still oppression. So I'm kind of like, what is the root? Why can't we go to the root and address it? Because, like you said, entering through all these portals and using that as your point of reference is helpful in terms of focusing your concern, but it doesn't help weave a comprehensive strategy.
Let us go to a caller and get their impression and opinions. Good morning, caller. Thank you.
Yes, am I? Do you hear me?
Yes, we do hear you.
Okay, I didn't hear my name called or whatever. Okay, the driving force, I think that was a question that was asked. Mm-hmm. Well, to me, the driving force in this society, the Americas, as well as throughout the world, is currency. Mm-hmm. And that being the case, that can also be used to divide people, to divide races, to divide the sexes, because everything focuses or chimes in and or attaches to a system of currency.
And
so, to me, that is the driving force and possibly the driving repulsion of people, is because there is no way to survive unless you attach yourself to a currency system.
And could you just explain a little bit more about that term currency system? What do you mean? You're talking about capitalism, or are you talking about how we work within our economy?
Okay. Currency is a means of exchange.
Okay.
And in this system, we call it a dollar. In India, they call it a rupee. In Japan, they call it the yen. This is a paper currency, and it has a means of measuring that which is wealth.
Okay.
But currency in itself is not wealth. It's just a means of exchanging wealth.
Okay. So are you calling for the suspension of ending of currency?
No. I would rather see the currency system operate like electrical power or water as a utility that is universally held in check, rather than to have a system that we presently have that allows a certain group to fluctuate, to diminish, to increase the currency system. Holding everyone else hostage to a system that's being, for lack of better terms, manipulated.
Okay. Well, thank you for your analysis, and I hope that you'll continue to engage others in this conversation. So thank you for...
One more short point.
Sure.
In Ithaca, New York, by Cornell University, they have what's called Ithaca Dollars.
Mm-hmm.
In Hood River, Oregon, right now, they have what's called River Hours.
Yes.
And in other parts of the country, they have local currencies where mm-hmm. people work together in a more of a local community basis with a currency system that helps and assists local artisans and agrarian people with local farms to help a system develop locally. And so rather than be involved in a national currency system that's, for lack of better terms right now, and I'm trying to be as tactful as possible, what we have now is a giant, massive Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm.
In process.
Okay. Very, thank you for calling and sharing your analysis with us this morning and offering your analysis and solution. Thank you. You are listening to KBOO FM, and this is More Talk Radio. The last caller, when he was talking about the currency, reminded me when I was a really small kid, and I used to go around the corner to the local store, and on the shelf, Mr. Robinson always had jars of candies and stuff like that, and also comic books. I was always curious as a child, why do I have to pay my nickel for candy? Why can't we just, if I need a candy, why can't I just go and take some? And if somebody needs something I have, why can't I not just give it to them? Needless to say, Mr. Robinson did not think that was a good idea. And I, find out that I did have to pay 5 cents for if I wanted a candy bar. But that's also dating me. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Me?
That's you, yes.
Okay. Your last caller had a good point that what I think you're fighting is just massive wanton ignorance on a national scale related to global
greed.
Yeah, that. it starts at the very basic toddler school level, and the main thing is that people have been brought up to equate capitalism with freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I constantly refer to myself to, even with some progressive people, their jaws dropped when I refer to myself as a small business capitalist. I mean, a small business socialist. So big slip up there. And they don't get it that that's possible, that that's, in fact, desirable. And it includes some of the positions that the former caller made. I think that was a great, I think that there's a variety of solutions, as your guest said. It is very widespread and all over the board, but this basic ignorance of socio-economic structure equating global rape and including of the people, of the producers by the manipulators, which is capitalism, is that's equated with freedom is one of the most monstrous propagandic victories ever, in this country at least, perpetrated on the world. And I think I am comforted by the swing to the left of the southern countries of the Americas,
right,
and the other outposts like Cuba, who have made it work in spite of what they'll tell you on the networks. And Europe started down another road too, and I think that this country is going back to the dark ages.
Well, thank you for your call. It sounds as if the movement is taking place all over the world, and U.S. is an isolated island. Hey, we're near the end of our time, so thank you for calling and sharing your thoughts this morning.
I was able to dig up the information for those of you who were intrigued by our caller's reference to the Small Mart Revolution. That is the title of the book, The Small Mart Revolution, How Local Businesses Are Beating the Global Competition. It is written by Michael Schumann, S-H-U-M-A-N, published in 2006. It's worth a read, I think, to find out what our caller was referring to, and maybe also as a possible starting point for some uniting strategies.
And John Cronin will speak this Wednesday at PSU from 3 to 5 p.m. and from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Variant 4810 Northeast Garfield and at Laughing Horse Bookstore Thursday, November 11th at 6 p.m. You have been listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Charles Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey, and this is KBOO Portland, your community connection.